Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at screens and the amount of time children spend with screens, man, they're all pretty hard to avoid. I'm just looking at what I'm looking at right now, and I have four screens in front of me. One of them's a split screen, so I'm looking at, well, actually a triple screen, so I'm looking at three, four, five, six different items of information on four different screens. And so that's kind of my day every day, but we're going to turn our attention more to children. I think there's too much time children spend with screens, and I think it might delay their development. And we'll be talking about that today with our guest, Jeff Ryland. Jeff is a child and family therapist with Gunderson Health System Behavioral Health. He's based out of La Crosse. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. What are you wondering about how screen time affects the youngsters in your life? Looking for ways to reduce screen time for yourself or your kids? You can join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Jeff, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show. Great to have you with us today.
You're welcome. I'm excited to be here. This is fun.
So what are the current pediatric guidelines about screen time for children? Let's get some base here.
And this is always a stressful conversation to have because most parents usually exceed those guidelines, and I have to say they're kind of a hard thing to reach, but they've been around for a long time. The American Academy of Pediatrics has had guidelines for about three decades. They have evolved a little bit. They're trying to be a little more flexible, in my opinion. But what they're saying is until 18 months of age, that's a year and a half, limit screen use to video chatting along with an adult. So if you're having FaceTime with grandma or grandpa, that kind of a conversation, not putting kids in front of a television to watch a movie or a video at that young age. Between ages 18 and 24 months, screen time should be limited to watching educational programming with a caregiver. So again, with an adult. So co-regulating, co-watching with an adult. And it's, you know, 20 to 30 minutes a day. For children ages 2 to 5, that bumps up a little bit to about 1 hour on a weekday, school day, and 3 hours on weekend days. And so it still averages out to less than 1.5 hours or so a day. And for 6 and older, all the way through adolescence, this is the hard one for teenagers if they're listening, 2 hours a day. That's for recreational screen use, not school related. And I know a lot of kids, you know, I'll use air quotes here, you can't see it, multitask. They really don't do well when they try that. But 2 hours of recreational screen time that includes video gaming, spending time on social media platforms, it's really a small amount. And there's a reason for it. It's not that a bunch of doctors ganged up and said, let's make children's lives miserable, although they might feel that way. It's really because we know that excessive screen time, especially for developing children, for their minds, it really does have some difficult effects on them, all the way through adolescence, in fact. And so I hope we can get into that a little bit.
Yeah, and Carol in Iowa actually has a question that relates to this. So let's go there. Carol, hi.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. I have a grandson who has pretty much left the family. I mean, everybody, he's living actually with the other grandparents, but he never comes out. In fact, he has some younger brothers, quite a bit younger, who have said he's a nocturnal, which, you know, it maybe sounds amusing, but I think he is addicted to video games, and he left college, and he left his job.
Hmm. And he's always in front of the computer, you're saying, Carol?
Correct. Yes.
No.
Yeah, I mean, my purposes are really for children, young children, but I can speak to that if it's okay. I can't, of course, diagnose or anything from a phone call or a conversation like this. But you know, there is definitely, and the research supports this, I teach a course at the university here in La Crosse on addictive behaviors, and I've been tracking this for the past decade and a half. There's definitely a relationship a lot of similarities between the use of addictive substances and certain addictive behaviors, like excessive use of screens, video gaming, of all of the screens that are used by children, teenagers, and adults, probably have the most addictive potential because of the immediate feedback loop, the dopamine hits that kids get when they're playing a game, all the positive reinforcement for getting to the next level, that kind of thing. And so while in this country we have not formally identified screens as a formal addiction in our diagnostic and statistical manual, it's a thing. It's something that we're moving toward. And I expect in the next decade or so, we'll be saying, yes, this is an addictive behavior, just like gambling. And so it's something that it causes impairment in relationships. It causes difficulties in jobs. It causes difficulties with people just getting on with life when they're spending that much time plugged in.
Yeah. Carol, thank you for calling. And we'll talk some more. And, you know, in her case or in her grandson's case, you know, it sounds like he needs somewhat help from somebody like you.
Or someone who specializes with adults, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and by the way, I want to give a shout out to Ann in Sturgeon Bay. Ann recommended that we talk about this topic, and so I want to give her some props for it. There's, in the first place, why, you know, there's been all kinds of studies in the past about TV, and I can remember years back, you know, the stories about TV is turning our kids' minds into mush, and now we've got TV, but we also have those other screens. And it seems that parents allow their children to have unlimited time, or some parents at least.
Yeah. Well, and you were talking about the number of screens that you have in front of you, and I was smiling at that because if you remember back, and I'm a product of the 1950s, and so I don't want to go back too far, but in the 1970s, most families in this country had one electronic device, one digital, or not even digital at the time, but one screen, a television. Mm-hmm. And by 2015, the average household had 8 screens in their house, if they counted video game systems, television, cell phones, and tablets. By 2024, just 9 years later, we're already averaging about 17 screens per household. It's easily more than one person can handle. And if there's three or four in a household, you have three or four choices. And I think one of the challenges we're facing is with so many choices, it's really easy for families to be plugged in to something. And I think one of the challenges that parents run into is they might have their own devices. They might use their screens as a way to de-stress. And they notice their children are quiet when they're plugged in. And that may be the reason. At least it keeps them quiet. So it functions to some extent as a pacifier. They may believe their children are learning something. And they may be learning some things, but they're not learning the important things for their ages, especially young children, like language, social-emotional communication. They don't learn those things from screens. They learn those things from human interaction. And I think that's the part that we really have to get the word out on so that we see less screen use for young children and more of that parent-child or family interaction.
Yeah, Anne emailed us. She says she feels like there's an issue with parents. They hold their infants or young children while they're looking at their phones instead of making eye contact with them. She's worried about it because of the importance of eye contact with parents for brain development and specifically attachment and emotional regulation. Could you comment on that?
Oh, I would love to. That is absolutely a thing. And when you think about the more time that parents are spending looking at a screen and not making eye contact, it's called the attachment gaze. It does make it difficult for children to know what they're looking at. Some of you may have ever seen the still face experiment, which is a wonderful study that's been done that looks at how children attend to what parents' facial expressions are looking like. When parents aren't reacting, when they're not responding, it causes a fair amount of distress, even very young children, even if it's just for a few minutes. And so I think that the neural wiring, the brain development that goes on when children are looking at facial expressions, where we get most of our information about what's going on in the world with other people, how to read affect, where the eyes are, what we're looking at, how to how to learn about emotions, that happens through that eye gaze that occurs between parents and children. And when parents are looking at something else while they're feeding, while they're bottle feeding their child, or while they're just in the same room, they're missing out on a lot, both parents and kids.
Samantha in Galesville has a question or comment. Hi, Samantha.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering, I'm 42, will be 43 in August, and I was wondering, when I was growing up, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you know, we had TVs and such, but, you know, things were just starting to come out and new technologies, but we played outside on the family farm, or if we lived in town when my parents were divorced and my mom lived in town and we played outside till the street lamp came on, and you know, all kinds of things, and you know, got ourselves tired that way, and we did a few chores, but otherwise it was mostly just playing outside. So what I'm wondering is, how do you get the kids of the, you know, later generation of the, maybe the, you know, now growing up in the, you know, late 90s, maybe way like 99 to the 2000s and such, to get them off of those screen time when they started, when they're in like preschool or kindergarten.
Or even before that, yeah. What do you think, Jeff?
Well, it sounded like my childhood. So being able to play outside, and there's certainly a, you know, screen time versus green time, just being outside. But one of the challenges that we do, I think, I don't want parents to leave this conversation thinking that they're doing something wrong. But if I can quote Maya Angelou, we do the best we can until we know better. And when we know better, we do better. And I really think that with more information about how to guide children, we're going to be more effective. And so rather than say, get off your devices or go play outside, sometimes kids need a little bit more detail about what their options are. And so maybe as a young child, the caller was able to have a lot of creativity. But when we've been plugged in for a long time, everything compared to a screen is boring. And that's a common word that kids say. It's like, I'm bored. It's like code for, can I plug in? Can I get on my TV or my tablet or whatever? And so what I really encourage parents to do is, and every family has to do this differently because no family has the same kind of resources or the same environment that they live in, is to make lists. The first list is all the things a child can do by themselves at home on a rainy day. And it becomes a year-round indoor list.
We'll talk some more with Jeff Ryland, a therapist in the Department of Behavioral Health at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. He'll be with us till 12:30, and we'll be back right after the news. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about screen time as it relates to our children. With our guest, Jeff Ryland, he is a therapist in the Department of Behavioral Health at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. Jeff's specialty is marriage and family counseling. So as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. How are you helping the children in your life engage in imaginative play, for example, instead of watching the phone or the television all the time? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Jeff, I want to go back to our last caller, because our last caller before our news break talked about how she spent a lot of time outdoors as a youngster and wants to know how we can get kids back outside And you had a suggestion that was really a good one, which involved lists. But talk about that.
Making lists because it's a visual prompt for kids and for parents. And so the first list, all the things they can do, a child can do by themselves in the house on a rainy day. Second list, all the things they can do with at least one more person. Could be a sibling, could be a friend, could be a parent. And so making a list of board games and card games, and not just listing that broad category, but every single game in the house, every single activity that can be done, working on puzzles together, whatever things, baking in the kitchen. And so you've got these, literally these menus of activities that can be done inside. Same thing can be done outside, but because we live in the upper Midwest, there are some weather concerns that you might want to make lists that maybe are seasonal. And so when kids are saying, I'm bored, there's nothing to do, and a parent says, well, look at the list. Look at all the choices we have. Screen time happens later in the day. I like to think about screen time as like dessert. It's a treat that you have after you've done the work of childhood. And the work of childhood during a day is it involves thinking and problem-solving skills, physical activity, social-emotional skills, and then recreational helping skills. If you've done all the work of the day as a child, you should get a little bit of screen time after dinner, well before bedtime, but not something that starts the day. It'd be like having ice cream for breakfast. And once you've had ice cream for breakfast, are you really going to want to eat anything else? You know, so I think that it just makes a lot of sense to use screen time as a reward for doing the work of childhood, which is getting outside, doing things that are physical. So we see a reduction in the childhood obesity problem that is happening in this country, partly because of the excess amount of time kids are spending on screens.
Yeah, I love that list idea. That is a very good one because I've been caught with that myself. Going outside, this is years back, but I didn't have a list. And so, you'll find something, and that doesn't work nearly as well as giving an exact, here are some options.
And what can be really helpful is it really empowers a child to participate in the decision-making and planning and problem-solving. I can do this first, I can do this second, and then maybe mom and I or mom can offer, how about if you do two of these things on your list, and then we can do this together. So it really involves teaching kids how to communicate, how to take turns, how to share, how to engage in flexible thinking. And it really eliminates the parent having to be the recreation director, planning all the ideas, and the child saying, no, that sounds boring. But if screen time happens like at 4 o'clock on a Saturday or 5:30 or 6 o'clock after dinner on a weekday, then the child knows that they've got other things they can do to occupy their time. And it's not a constant battle with parents either chasing kids off devices or telling them they have to wait. And really, I think it just sets families up to have less negative interaction and more positive activity. Sometimes older kids will say, well, I don't want to go to my sister's concert because I'm going to get cheated out of my screen time tonight. And I say, you never lose screen time. It's one of my favorite things to say to kids. You should never lose screen time, but you have to earn all of it. And so parents can say, you know what, we want you to go to your sister's concert. And so you can bank that screen time. You can have it for those 2 hours that you get. You can use them another time, rainy day, sleep over with a friend. Or if you don't want to use them, you can always cash them in for something that maybe you want to get those shoes that are a little more expensive than we would otherwise buy. We'll chip in this much and you can give us some screen time back. And so you kind of buy back the screen time. That way, it's not going to be a battle. The kids are losing it. They just always use it if they can't get it all in that night.
Love those ideas. I had an email from someone who said, I've heard that some kids' shows are created to be extremely stimulating. They use a lot of bright colors, quick camera movement. And that can be addictive for young children. What do you think about that? Are there shows that offer lower stimuli for kids and would be better options?
Well, the answer is yes, there are shows that are really exciting and they've got a lot of stimulation and children get almost nothing out of them. Because they're for young children especially, they're not able to make any sense of any kind of storyline because they don't have that part of their brain developed enough yet. And so really fast, rapidly paced shows that have lots of activity going on. They might keep a child's attention, but they're not learning anything from that experience. And yes, there are shows, any like Sesame Street, oh, that's a classic, Sesame Street, or anything that's on PBS for children is usually really well done and it's designed to teach. But for young children, it's always best if children and parents watch together until about the age of two. And so they've got that experience, or three, I think. And so they've got that experience where they're sharing those things and parents can use their language. And that's one of the challenges of what prompted us to reach out had to do with the study that came out just last week from the Journal of the American Medical Association Pediatrics on the link between excessive screen time and language delays in children. And language is so important for children because they learn how, as they get older, how to use their words instead of being aggressive. And so we see a precipitous drop in aggression between the ages of 3 and 5 as kids acquire language. But when they're watching screens all the time, parents aren't talking to them, and they're not using language either. And there's a drop in the amount of interaction between parents and children when they're watching too much screen time.
Yeah, I was amazed. Thanks for sending that article along so we could take a look at it. The number of words dropped here we're talking. I think there was one where a 3-year-old who was using about almost 3 hours a day on a screen. Right. Talk about that.
Yeah, the study really looked at. It was a really well-done study using some pretty high-tech equipment to try to measure the amount of language that children had while screens were on in the house. And so the researchers extrapolated. They said an average child in the United States and many developed countries, it's about 3 hours a day of screen time they get. And so when screens are even when it's background television, parents use fewer words, children use fewer words, and there are fewer back and forth conversations between kids and parents. And so the study actually identified, they estimated it would be about 1,139 adult words, 843 vocalizations from children to communicate back, and almost 200 conversations that get lost in a day when parents and kids aren't communicating because of screens. And so when you think about how children learn, it's layer upon layer and repetition upon repetition over time. And when you take out, much like the attachment gaze we talked about earlier, when you reduce by half the amount of conversation going on in a household, or the amount of attachment or amount of gazing, eye contact between parents and children, that is going to have an impact on that child's social emotional development.
Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing thing. I could hardly believe that it was really striking, those differences. Well, Stella in Sturgeon Bay, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to, earlier you said something about how children get totally focused in on screens. I wanted to share an experience from when my siblings and I were probably from toddler to about kindergarten age, and the only screens available at that time were the very beginnings of television and movie theaters, and we visited some cousins, and for the first time in our lives, and us kids' lives, and I guess my parents too, probably, we experienced television. Our cousins had gotten a television. And we three children just sat there completely mesmerized, unmoving, just totally focused on that television for I don't know how long it was played. And my mother came away from that experience saying anything that keeps children that young, that still, for that long is not good.
Stella, thank you for calling. Jeff, you probably agree with that.
Oh, my. I absolutely. She's right. And her mother was really wise to notice that. I think that, again, screens are, they have this ability to mesmerize children, young children especially. And I think that again, they're not all bad. I don't want people to leave this discussion thinking that we're saying screens are bad. Everything in moderation, and what's too much, I think, is really important to try to figure out. And that's why the pediatric guidelines are there. But screens are, I like it. You know, when you think about your own childhood, what are your favorite memories? I ask parents, what are your favorite memories of childhood? And it's so much fun to hear groups of families or parents talk about all the fun things they did as kids. And never once has somebody said watching TV was a favorite memory. Yeah. Never once has somebody said, you know, this thing that I did all by myself with a screen was my favorite thing. It's always, you know, stargazing or digging for worms in the garden or catching butterflies or playing hide and seek or whatever activities. You know, the only time a screen's been involved is what Stella was talking about, going to a movie theater or a drive-in theater and having popcorn and blankets in the car. And that's a memory because everyone's doing it together. And so, you know, screens are like, I like to say watching videos or screens is like Jell-O. It's filling, but it has no nutritional value.
Yeah.
And so it's not a really good thing to take up too much time in a child's day or their life.
Phyllis in Madison, your turn. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi, thank you. Well, I want to bring up a radical idea that I think your guest can't almost, and that is you can just decide when you're having kids not to have a television. And we made that decision when I was pregnant with our first child and still don't have a television, whatever it is, 37 years later. And it's just easier sometimes to have none than to say, oh, you can have this much and argue about how much, and then they go on and turn on the television themselves anyway. But of course it takes a lot more time because then you have to spend time with them, which of course I was happy to do. But I remember one child who played with our kids, and I was trying to settle them down. Something had happened. I said, let's read a book. Started reading a book that my children loved. And this child said, there's not, what do you say? Some of these pictures aren't even in color. And I could tell that he was not used to listening to books being read, and that television, as you said earlier, is so exciting, and a book in comparison pales. And my children, you know, grew up to read a lot, and I think that's because we didn't have a TV.
Yeah, yeah. Jeff?
I can't say that. I think lots of people would like not to have as many TVs. We certainly don't want TVs in bedrooms. That's another pediatric guideline. No televisions in bedrooms. I would like to add no televisions in bedrooms for adults, which is, again, kind of a radical idea. When my family was growing up, when my kids were young, we had a television, but we kept it behind a cupboard, so it was never out. And so we had very limited use. And to this day, I might watch a television maybe once every 6 months. I just don't have a big need for it. But I think that it's a part of our society, and we want our kids to have some connection to other kids. And many kids have devices. And so there's a balance between not having access to any of it and at least knowing what it's like. We decided to have our kids watch a Christmas special when my oldest was 8 years old. They'd never seen a TV, never watched a show before. And when the commercial came on, they got up to go to bed because they'd never seen a commercial. And we thought, oh my gosh, we maybe have gone a little too far over here. We should expose them a little bit to the world and what life is like. And our kids, they're fine because they do know how to video game and they all have computers and all that. But again, it's at that young age, it's limiting their access so their brains have time to grow and learn the things they really need to learn. And that happens in the context of relationships, not from a screen.
Yeah. We have a listener in Madison with a comment or question. Hi, thank you for calling.
I don't even know which comment to choose. I'm a mother. My children were born in 99 and 2002, and it has been a lifelong battle. I think one of the problems is that the schools are feeling compelled to introduce electronics like Chromebooks and computers in the school as part of the curriculum, at the same time that parents are battling at home this addiction to screens.
Yeah.
And so there's information in the whole school about drugs and how damaging they are, but at the same time, they're exposing the children to drugs, which are the screens. And the kids spend a lot of their energy and time trying to look at memes and jokes and videos while they're learning about computers. And the computer companies are actually donating the computers to the schools as part of the curriculum, but it's also getting them addicted. Even if you don't have the screens at home, they get addicted at school.
Jeff, a comment?
Yeah, I certainly have seen that in my clinical practice where kids are used to having devices at school. And I try to make a distinction between computer use, like what Larry's doing with those devices in front of him, what I do in my office. We have those things for work. Many times children have those things that are required for their schoolwork. And so when we're talking about screen use, we're talking about recreational screen use. And unfortunately, as you just talked about or you mentioned, that kids toggle back and forth. They might open a tab in some other area. And so when they're supposed to be doing their homework, they might be on TikTok or they might be going over and looking at YouTube videos. And that's a real challenge because the research has been overwhelming that kids don't multitask any more than adults can multitask very well, that you can't do two or three things at once and really do them well. And so kids don't learn as well when they're trying to go back and forth between their homework and doing the other stuff they'd rather do. So when parents have homework to do at home with their kids, I think for young children especially, it's best to say, we're going to do it here at the kitchen table where we can make sure we get the homework done. And then that screen gets put away. All the more reason, if you're concerned about your kids having too much screen time at school, to make sure they've got a really language-rich and also activity-rich environment at home. And that's why those lists can be so helpful, because they're prompts that you can just point to, like a menu at a restaurant. Here are your choices. Look at all the things you can do before you get plugged in again.
Hmm. Liz in Madison wondered if single parents use screens in different ways. She had a single mom, and she gave her a list of books she had to read outside of school. And Liz thinks it's important for kids to use their imagination. We get very influenced and caught up in others' lives.
I do think that single parents do have that added burden of trying to do a lot with less adults involved in the story sometimes. And so screens can serve that function of, I know my child is safe. I know they're occupied while I'm getting dinner ready. Again, I think it's a balancing act that parents have to figure out. How do I make it so that I can time my child's their usage of screen, their involvement with recreational screens, with my activity, my time with them also. So I think it's a hazard, but it's not just families that with single parents that struggle with this.
Well, I like Liz's mom's idea of giving her a list of books that to read outside of school. And so there was the time was book time, not screen time.
Oh, absolutely. Screen time versus green time, book time, any other kinds of activities. And in fact, that's how kindergartens run. They have music time. They have circle time. They have activity time. They've got all kinds of different times in their 15-minute segments that are broken up. And so because that's about the attention span of a kindergartner. And so if families, we can't be that structured in a home environment, but we can say, we're going to go outside this afternoon when it's nice out. And then we're going to do this craft project before dinner. And then so kids can know what to look forward to and can anticipate. They do really well with structure. Kids need that. Young children especially need to have predictability and structure and routine in addition to the nurturing in their lives in order for their development to proceed well.
So we got around a minute or just a little longer to summarize. What can parents, we know it's, they shouldn't be on the screens as much as they are. What should parents or grandparents do?
Well, I think it would be really helpful if first we adults step back and look at what our screen time use is and what our involvement is. This may come as a surprise, but the recommendations from the National Institute of Health for adult screen use is about 2 hours a day for recreational screen time. It's no different than for children. or teenagers. And so when we're looking at our own use, we're both modeling our access to screens. And some adults have a hard time not checking their phones during dinner or texting or social media, whatever they're doing. And so finding out, how do I put this away? How do I model that I don't need this unless there's an emergency that I need to be available for? How do I model how to show my kids that I don't need this either? We can all have screen-free time during the day, meal times, family activity times, I think would be a great start. Using lists like that for younger children, especially making sure we're talking with them, that we're having conversations with them, that we have a language-rich environment. I love the idea of having books that children can read when they're old enough to pick their own books, but also that we can read to children as part of our routine with them every day.
Jeff, I hope we have a chance to do this again. Thank you so much for being with us today, and we'll look forward to another visit, hopefully. Jeff Ryland is a family therapist in the Department of Behavioral Health at Gundersen Health System in La Crosse. We'll try and get him back and do this again. And thank you for listening. Tomorrow we'll learn about what anglers are doing to protect trout streams. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.